Welcome to Empowering Connections, a podcast by Connie Akins, a licensed professional counselor with a private practice to help you heal your personal and professional relationships through counseling advice, tips, and ideas. Empowering Connections will focus on healthy ways to improve these relationships, help you manage your stress, and attain a better sense of self-fulfillment.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Today I have two special guests with me. Eric Scott, a licensed master social worker, and Nicole Bell, a licensed professional counselor. Eric is the owner of First Step Counseling, and Nicole is the owner of Healthy Mindset Counseling. They have a tremendous amount of experience, and today we're going to talk about how the pandemic has impacted mental health. Welcome, guys.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hi, Connie. Thanks for having me.
You are welcome. And so, you know, we all work with people and children and teens. And so we are concerned about mental well-being. And so Eric and I were talking on my last show about this topic, and we know that it's one that's having a great impact on people. And so I'm going to just go ahead and ask the first question. And that question is, how has the pandemic affected mental health? And then there's areas that I'm going to break down. So the first one would be like family and friendships, parenting, schooling, marriage, dating, careers, and then suicide attempts. And so we're going to start with Nicole, and then we'll toggle back and forth between Nicole and Eric.
Okay. I think the pandemic has impacted every aspect of our life. I don't think that as long as I've been living, there has been anything that I've come across that has impacted everything that I do, every aspect of my life. So when you listed family, parenting, school, marriage, dating, I think the biggest thing that came first was the isolation from your family, your place of work, place of that you went to school. You were isolated from your normal routine. And I think that that was the biggest change that many people experienced. Increased time at home. Parents have to deal, having to deal with their children on a more one-on-one basis for longer periods of time, juggling working from home. And when you're talking about isolation, not being able to socialize and not being able to reach out to your family and friends, it can impact your mental health. And I think that all of those areas were impacted by the sudden change. It was like everything slowed down, everything stopped. It was one of those things where it makes it easier for anxiety, depression to creep into your life. And so I think that, you know, it was a sudden thing that came in and impacted all of those areas and so many more on a very different level than we're used to. And so when you talk about how has it impacted it, how hasn't it, we'd be better off talking about how it hasn't, because that list would be much shorter. I think we could probably spend quite a while on each of those areas, because it's so many ways of, talking about. One interesting thing that I read about, I think I sent this article to you guys too, is that suicide attempts, even though it's far more than it should be, decreased. Some studies show that it decreased.
Absolutely.
And going into this, a lot of people thought that it would increase. But I think the sense of togetherness, families being with each other more often, you got that support. You were able to see your family member in a different light because you were together more often. And then the availability of telehealth services as well. People are more likely to seek assistance when it's more convenient. And so I think those were the things that may have contributed to the suicide rates not increasing. So those were just some of the things that were interesting to me when it came to the effects on mental health as far as this pandemic.
Eric, what's your perspective?
Well, I totally agree with what Nicola said. I think social isolation is probably one of the greatest factors that we've dealt with. I think also just the uncertainty and not knowing what tomorrow holds has been one of the biggest contributing factors to weigh on our mental health in a negative way. Not knowing if we were next to catch the virus, not knowing if our family was safe, not knowing that if our jobs would be intact, So I think just that, just uncertainty has really, really cost a lot and really weighed a lot on anxiety, really has kind of put the envelope with anxiety. So I concur with what Nicola said. I think the pandemic has been totally, totally stressful, but to some degree, it's hard to delineate what's what because we've dealt with social unrest. The pandemic has been going on, mass shootings been going on. So when you look at our normal day-to-day stress, I always tell folks, I tell my client, to imagine yourself in a bubble and you got all these arrows trying to penetrate the bubble. So you got COVID-19, you got mass shooting, you got social unrest, you got the kids at home 24/7, I got a spouse at home 24/7. As much as I love her, we never spent this much time together, So it's just, the stress has just been increased all over the place, And as Nicola said, it's added to depression, anxiety, and it's just been a most interesting time. We have dealt with grief like never before. Kind of one of the things we talked about even early on was just trauma, the primary trauma, the secondary trauma. And it's not over. I did read the article that Nicola sent out in terms of suicide rates had actually decreased. But what I'm telling everybody, clients and everyone, is not over yet. We're just starting to see some of the fallout, economic fallout. So, I think the last thing we can do is kind of fold our arms and say, well, the vaccine is here and things are coming to an end. I don't think things are coming to an end. I think things are starting to slowly stabilize to some degree, but the work in a lot of ways, I think, has just begun in terms of mental health and the effect, the impact that it has had and that it will have on our society.
Absolutely. And I'm going to say a couple things too about mental health. As a therapist, owning a practice, my phone never stops ringing. I tell Nicola all the time that I get 2, 3, 4 phone calls, probably almost every day, or an email with someone wanting to get help. So one thing I'll say is that, because of the isolation, because of the new responsibilities and added stressors that people have faced, I think that has also caused people to reach out for help more. Couple counseling increase. Parents wanting to get support to deal with their children increase. Parents dealing with the level of frustration around schooling, be it hybrid learning, remote learning, parenting a school-age child is a challenge right now because you have a lot of working parents who are unable to balance everything. And so, at the very end, we're going to talk about balance and self-care and all that good stuff. But it has been an important observation to just be able to hear what people are saying about their own mental well-being. As a single person myself during the pandemic, there have been moments where I can honestly say, wow, I wish I could, see my family. Or at the very beginning, when it was holidays and things like that, and people were not able to, have celebrations. Nicola and I were talking today about graduations. Parents were missing what we consider basic fundamental entitlements are, almost, I would say. And that in itself was a challenge. A lot of my clients who are single and were looking for an intimate partner found it challenging to even consider dating anyone, because you just can't get out. There's so many things that were shut down in Michigan and across the nation. And I think all of that had an impact. And if you think about this one, going to church for people who enjoy the fellowship of other Christians, it changed, it shifted. And yeah. I think that had an impact on everyone. So Eric, you brought up, does anyone want to say something before I go on to the next thing?
If I could, just, I want to touch bases. You know, you talked about parents and dealing with schooling, and that's an issue that's near and dear to my heart. But one of the things I've really kind of pushed with my clients in terms of the parents is that, you know, that old thing, control what you can control. I think so often our parents have become so worked up because, and to some degrees, they were trying to imitate school. And, you know, one thing I've explained to them is that, well, no, you are a teacher, you know, but you're not a teacher in the educational system. And to, you know, again, control what you can control. And I don't say this to be careless by any means, but, you know, unfortunately, in a pandemic, there are casualties. And there's going to be some educational casualties, you know, that there's going to have to be some makeups and things like that. So what I've found is that a lot of my parents have put so much stress on themselves that, you know, and so I've come from the route was just relax, let go to a degree, do the very best you can, you know, structure yourself, structure your kids' life, but at the same time, don't drive yourself crazy over this because you're not a teacher, you know, do the very best you can. You know, we will spend the next 10, 15 years, you know, trying to recoup some of the losses that we've lost on this pandemic. It's just the nature of a pandemic. As Nicole said in the opening statement, none of us have never experienced this, you know, in our lives. This is something new for us. So in terms of this, that schooling piece, I've really tried to calm my clients' nerves and ask them to relax and control what you control, and what you can't control, let it go. Yeah.
Absolutely. Nicole, did you want to add something?
I did. I just wanted to touch on something that Eric mentioned earlier. You know, he was saying we haven't really seen the fallout. And I think that just like the medical professionals are saying that we haven't seen the fallout of, you know, the long-term effects of how COVID is going to have an impact on your physical health, I think it's the same thing with our mental health. We haven't seen the long-term effects of this yet. And it's going to take time and, you know, it's going to be seeking that help. And as we go along to get through this pandemic, it, like Eric said, it's not over. So we still have yet to see what really comes out of all of this mentally and physically.
Absolutely. And Eric, you brought up a very important point about systemic racism. So my next question was, during the pandemic, African Americans and Asians have had to deal with systemic racism. And so I guess the question is, what do you think is the impact of that?
I think that systemic racism has been one of those issues that's been with us since we've been in this country, and it's nowhere near the end. While I think that COVID has just brought about stresses all over the place, I don't know if, in fact, that what we're seeing with African Americans and with Asian Americans in terms of racism, if it's totally just directly related to COVID. I think there's, you know, as I, you know, spoke earlier, I think there's so many other social ills that's going on. You know, one of the things is that, you know, we for 4 years, we had a political climate was just very toxic, you know? So when you look at the racism and all that stuff, I think it was greatly impacted by the political climate that was going on. Not to say that COVID did not have anything to do with it, because COVID did. COVID had something to do with, I think, everything we've dealt with. But again, I think it's kind of hard to delineate when the climate was so, so terrible, you know, that, you know, we've been dealing with I think in a lot of ways, many people who wanted permission to be racist and to show that racism, they were given a free ticket to show it. And that's what happened, you know, dealing with the political climate. Like I said, not to say that COVID did not have a part with it, because I think COVID did add additional stress to it.
Yeah. I agree with Eric. I don't know if the true impact as far as racism had much to do with the pandemic. We were dealing with this well before the pandemic. Racism is a pandemic in itself that's gone unaddressed for too long. And I think that people were home, they had more time to focus on it. And we, you know, and no matter what color or where you come from or what race you are, it was in your face because we were at home, we were watching it, it's being filmed more. I think what the pandemic did uncover was some of the disparities in racial inequities in healthcare. So that was one of the things that I think the pandemic helped shine a light on. But racism as a whole, the pandemic is, just exacerbated some of those things. As far as, you know, with African-Americans, I can speak from that personally. With Asians, from what I've seen, it's more to do definitely with the political climate and the association with Asians with the virus directly, which was unfair and, you know, unfounded. It was one of those things where the politicians kind of put that out there, and then people started to feel the heaviness of what was going on with the pandemic. And a lot of times we look for someone to point fingers at, and then politicians made it okay to point the finger at Asians, which had nothing to do with what was going on. The world was dealing with this at one time, no matter where it originated, and they may never know exactly where it originated. But I think what we're seeing with the Asian population had more to do with politics. And as far as African-Americans, what we're dealing with now with police brutality and all of the social unrest has been going on for quite a while. So it's a huge impact, and it just emphasizes it more when you're going through something like the pandemic.
Absolutely. I'm going to bring up a couple of points. One is, during the pandemic, as an African-American, we witnessed the murder of George Floyd. And I think that that had a tremendous impact on the psyche of African-American men and women, mm-hmm. and children. It was a time where we were having to address systemic racism, have conversations with young people about the political climate. And also what we saw was an increase in the Black Lives Matter movement during the pandemic. So, you know, it was hard to separate one issue from the other issue, because you had a social justice revolution occurring, and then you had a global health pandemic all at the same time. And you had people who were literally sacrificing, I would say, almost themselves to mm-hmm. be a part of the social justice movement. And as you said, there's always been health disparities within our community. We see it now, even with the vaccine, in terms of people having conspiracy theories about whether or not they should be vaccinated. You know, the health disparities in the African American community are great. And many of them actually, they stem from systemic racism. And so, you know, the lack of faith in the healthcare system, or the disbelief that a vaccine is safe, all of these things occurring at the same time are, like you all said earlier, they're stressful, they're anxiety provoking, People are depressed, and you know, it just really caused a lot of problems. And I would often be speaking with clients in session, and they would be talking about grief, the vaccine, the theory of how people actually got COVID, and also just the social unrest. And it was really wearing on them, really, really wearing on them.
Yeah, you know, I think overall, just that whole minority stress syndrome has been so prevalent in the last year or so. I mean, it's been prevalent for many, many years. But again, in the last year or so, it has really just come to surface. So when you, when we talk about the Asian Americans, you know, we talk about, you know, women, you know, and rights and, you know, the Me Too movement. But that minority stress syndrome has really, really been more prevalent. And so, you know, as much as we can compartmentalize and separate issues, because when you look at everything that's going on, it can be overwhelming for everyone, you know.
Absolutely.
I think it's really imperative that we really, as best we can, separate those things and really try to help people deal with it, because it's just a lot going on overall.
Absolutely. And I'm going to say, you know, this next question about how can families deal with the stress of having to choose between hybrid and remote school. This question came about because in Michigan, there are many school districts where children are hybrid, remote, some fully in person. There's no, there's not one plan that everyone's following. I should say it that way. And because everyone is following a different plan, it just causes so many issues. What do you guys think?
You want me to take that one first, honey?
Yes, go ahead, Nicole.
Sure. So I talk to parents all the time where when they're trying to decide, and, you know, when we're having meetings and I tell them, you know, it's your this is a family decision. I cannot tell you which way, which direction to go in. And so I just give them some kind of tips to kind of assess their child and their family situation. You have to decide what's best for your child. You have to assess, first of all, you have to, in the middle of a pandemic, you have to assess your child's risk and your family's risk for COVID. And that can play a big role into whether your child is going to remain at home or return to school. If the risks for medical reasons are low, then you have to look at, okay, if this is going, if my child is going to stay home, then, you know, what type of learner is my child? Is he going to need extra support at school? So you really need to look at your, gather information about your school's COVID plan, because of course you said all the plans are different. So you need to know what your district is doing and understand how they're going to keep your child safe. You need to understand what school resources are there. If my child is on a hybrid schedule on the days that they're not there and he needs help or she needs help, who can they reach out to? If they're at home all the time, does the teacher have office hours? You need to understand the resources. And then you need to be able to make a commitment to one plan or the other, because going back and forth causes a lot of stress for children when in the middle of learning. And then once you have decided, you need to understand if your district is going to allow you to change if your situation changes and when. If you choose to stay remote and you change your mind and you know, numbers go down and you want your child to go to school, is that possible? You need to understand transportation, because transportation is a big thing when you're if you're working outside of the home or if you're staying home with other children, you can't take your child back and forth. You know, you need to understand what's going on the bus. Sometimes I kind of direct families to the state website or the CDC websites, because a lot of the coronavirus websites have where you can kind of do a checklist and assess your situation to help you kind of check those things off that you should be asking or you should know before you make your decision. There are some things on the CDC's website that helps you assess your risk level for COVID. So I kind of direct them to that. But those are some of the things that you need to do to kind of limit the stress when trying to make that decision for choosing between going, having your child go hybrid or remain at home and do school remotely. And that may, you, if you have multiple children, that may be different for every child. So you have to make an assessment by your child, just because all of them are different. You know, we have to take an approach to parenting different, and the same thing goes with COVID. So some, those are some of the things that I have shared with my parents, and definitely recognizing the emotional impact on your individual children when you are making that decision as well. So a lot of factors go into it, and you kind of got to sit down and, for lack of a better way of explaining it, make a pros and cons list and decide what's best for you, your family, and that individual child.
Thanks. Eric, would you like to add?
Yeah, just a couple of things. You know, one of the things in talking to the families about just dealing with different schedules and the changes in the school systems is that the way I've explained is that the most consistent thing these days is inconsistency. You know, it's changing every day. So, you know, Nicole talked about the CDC, but also I've really referred parents a lot to the state. The state of Michigan has various resources that can really help. And, you know, this is with all families, but then some of our families who students have special needs, you know, be it they have an IEP for special education or a 504 plan, those are just even extra stresses on parents, you know, oftentimes. So, but one of the things is more on a concrete level that I've really talked to parents about to try to help them reduce the stress is to maintain some structure in a kid's life. You know, get up at a certain time, you know, do your hygiene, get your breakfast. You know, you might not dress as if you're leaving, going to school, but get dressed. Just that structure in a kid's life, really the routine helps a lot. And so overall, I think it can reduce stress, not only the parents' part, but on the kids' parts as well. So I think it's really important that we, as best we can, maintain some structure in our life. And as adults, you know, there was a period of time, you know, it was shorts and shirts, you know, it wasn't a lot of structure in my life, you know, for a month or so, you know, but as much as possible, they can maintain structure in their kid's life and just utilize the resources, because there are a lot of resources out there. I mean, you know, early on, no one knew how to respond to this pandemic, but as time has gone on, I think a lot of people, a lot of agencies, organizations have kind of caught up to speed, and there are resources out there. So just really helping parents kind of navigate through the various resources out there has kind of really helped lessen some of the stress that they're dealing with.
Thanks, Eric. I want to add that making that decision can be complicated when you have children, like Nicole said, of different ages. So the resources that are needed for a younger child may be totally different from a high school age child. As a matter of fact, children or teens who are in high school, they also may want to have greater input on the decision about whether or not they return to in-person learning. And I think that it depends on the social dynamics of a family or the family structure, like Nicole said. For example, if a student is living outside of the home with another relative, and we know that this particularly may happen in some urban communities where students have been reared by like a grandparent or an aunt or someone that's elderly, then making those decisions can be challenging, because we don't know if teens have the emotional space to take on the responsibility of possibly passing COVID to a parent or someone within their family who is ill. And I'm happy to see that a lot of districts actually had the option of either remaining remote or choosing to go to in-person learning, because the scenarios are different. And it's different based on the demographics of the population, the demographics of the community. And all of that needs to be taken into consideration. One other good thing that's happening right now in Michigan is that students who are 16 years old can actually get a COVID vaccine.
Absolutely.
So that will have a tremendous impact on in-person learning in the fall. And so, you know, just constantly having to deal with uncertainty around education, I would say has probably had a great impact on students and families. I know that personally, as a person who deals with high school students, that many, many students have told me that they don't like remote learning. So, you know, they don't like the social isolation that they feel. And one of the things that I actually noticed is that part of that comes from when they show up, they don't really show up, meaning that teachers are looking at screens with just names and no faces. And it's complicated. You know, it's complicated for the students, it's complicated for the instructors, and it's complicated for families. And I think that all of that needs to be taken into consideration.
Absolutely.
Okay. You guys are really awesome. Well, this is like one of the most important questions to me. What are some coping skills and strategies that people can use to take care of the emotional and mental health? And we're going to start with you this time, Eric.
Okay. I think one of the biggest things that I've talked to folks about is that social distancing doesn't necessarily mean social isolation, you know, that we need to be connected. You know, we're social beings right there. And we started, I think, off, Nicole started off just talking about the social isolation being one of the biggest factors that we've had to deal with. So that's one issue that I've really kind of pushed with them. But also in terms of just really coping skills and protecting your mental health is I've talked to them a lot about the exposure to the news and to social media. You know, we need to be informed, but we don't need to overdose on the news, on social media. And I think sometimes that causes anxiety and even depression because we just fed with so much. And there's so much negative news going on these days that it's just so easy to get an overload of it, you know. But one of the things also is really trying to help them to, as best they can, remain in the present. You know, we can get caught up in the past. We can get caught up with what might happen, what's going to happen. But as much as we can focus on what's going on today, how's my family doing today? You know, helping them to remain in the present, I think that, you know, really can help a lot in terms of just coping skills, you know. Being active, you know, when Michigan weather allows us, let's get outside and be in the sun. Let's take some walks and let the family take some walks and things like that. I think it's really important. And as I said earlier, you know, as much as possible, keeping some structure in your life. I think those are just some of the things we can do to kind of cope with what's been going on.
Absolutely. Nicole?
Some of the things I thought about when we talk about coping with your emotional and mental health, one of the things that I think that was a big impact for people who are religious is when the churches weren't able to have service, and then now services are, some of them are, you know, limited capacity. So find a way to connect with those faith-based organizations in your community again. We talked about the social connection, staying connected with your loved ones, but also staying connected with your community. Check on your neighbors, talk to your neighbors, see what's going on. A lot of times they may be able to share some things that they found out that is helping them cope. Establishing a routine, like Eric said earlier, but you got to have, with that structure, you got to have work-life balance while you're at home. Because what I found is I was working longer because I was at home, and it wasn't like I knew to shut down because it's time to go. So, you know, you got to have that work-life balance. You got to add that self-care, relaxation into your routine. Eric said earlier, limit that information overload. You know, a lot of times I found myself watching the news and I was like, okay, this is getting to me. I need to turn this off. Meditation, mindfulness. I know that the state website had where they have introduced a partnership with headspace.com, where they you go on to that website and they offered tools for meditation and mindfulness exercises. Making sure you're reaching out for support when needed. Those are some of the coping skills and strategies, whether it's a friend, professional support, family, you reach out to those support people and agencies that you have in your life or that are available. And a lot of agencies are coming forward with help during this time because they know people are struggling to get through because it's been a long road and we still aren't at the end of this pandemic. Deep breathing exercises help you clear your mind and help you regain focus. So those are some of the things that came to mind when I was thinking about, trying to come up with some strategies and coping skills to help us get through this time.
Thanks, Nicole. So a follow-up question would be, what are some self-care activities? And I think you both highlighted a few. But if you want to say a little bit more.
Things that I thought about, I kind of broke them down for self-care physically and then mentally. So physically, I would say eat a healthy diet. Make sure you're getting enough sleep. Say 7 to 8 hours is great. I know some people can function on less, but I need more. Exercise frequently. Try to avoid those risky behaviors. I know we've been at home, so people tend to indulge in other things, drugs, alcohol, gambling. Make sure that you are avoiding risky behaviors like that, especially, when it comes to the public health recommendations. Eric mentioned this earlier, spend time outside. Make sure you're following the social distancing guidelines and wearing your mask, but spend time outside. And last one on the physical list was looking to getting vaccinated. It may not be for everyone. It's a personal decision, but it's something that you need to research, talk to your doctor about, and make sure you're making the best decision for yourself. When it comes to mental health, we talked about some of the things like setting and maintaining a routine. Focus on the things you can control. Those things help you get through because there are a lot of things outside of our control right now. Eric talked about this earlier, focusing on the present. Be grateful for today. Listening to music, reading books kind of help people. Music gets us through a lot of things in our life, and our lives are soundtracks. So some of the music that we listen to during this time will remind us about this time. Make sure when you are in taking that information from the news, they're reliable media sources in limited amounts, like we said earlier. And find out what works for you. Meditation, connecting with others, those things are important. And then if you're experiencing any anxiety, trouble focusing, difficulty managing your emotions, hopelessness and helplessness, please reach out to a professional to get some help. If it's something that, has been going on for a while and you're finding it is interfering with your daily functions, make sure that you're reaching out and getting some help. Professionals are available. And like we said earlier, telehealth is available. If you cannot leave the home or you fear the virus and, it's safer for you to stay home.
Thank you. That was an exhaustive list. I really liked it. Eric, do you have anything?
Just a couple of things. One thing that I want to remind us, and I talk to my colleagues all the time about, is that we have to take care of ourselves also. We're not exempt from this. I don't know many people at this point who have not had some type of experience with COVID, be it a family member, a friend, a death, or whatever. So I think not only are we dealing with our own families and our own issues, but we're dealing with everybody who come our way also. So I think, I think when you're in private practice, it can be somewhat isolating itself, So I think having supervision, if you don't have a counselor or therapist that you see yourself, really having that supervision, having somebody I can call, Connie, I had this old crazy case today. This lady lost 5 of her kids. I need to get that off of me, because that's a lot, and we tend to hold it and just kind of hold it. And then so we are human also. So one of the things in terms of self-care is making sure we take care of ourselves so we can be better able to take care of the people who come our way. So I think it's really important that we kind of focus on that, that aspect of it. Beyond that, I think Nicole, you know, again, had a pretty exhaustive list. I totally support everything that was said there. As I said earlier, you know, it's not over yet, but together we'll make it, you know, and I think we got to keep that in mind. And that's the message that we have to kind of send to our clients as they come that way, that, you know, we have to have some hope so we can instill some hope in them.
Absolutely. And I just want to add to Nicole's list about getting proper hydration. We need to drink water. It can be alkaline water. We can also drink herbal teas, things that are healthy and nutritious. And, you know, Nicole's list was so wonderful. I wrote a list and I think she took all the things off my list. I do want to say that along with therapy or seeking out a mental health professional, just be aware of your own personal development. Sometimes we're so consumed with everyone outside of us, like Eric said. And so just be aware of that. I think Nicole mentioned reading. I want to mention journaling. Or being creative, doing something creative. And it just takes a lot to have the mindset that it's okay to take care of yourself. Because every day that we are out here giving to others, we need to reciprocate some of that self-love and that self-development so that we can be a better person. So, yeah. Pay attention to your beauty habits, your grooming. It's kind of funny that people were saying they hadn't taken a bath in like 3 days. And I'm like, what? Pandemic is not an excuse to not do your grooming, people. But, you know, I think it has been an excuse for us to wear leggings and jogging pants and t-shirts and, you know, just really be relaxed. And so one of the things that I started reading like midway through the pandemic is that sometimes our perspective on life, it really influences us. And what this reading said was, look at all the things that we gained, you know, during the pandemic. And I think sometimes we fail to realize that level of gratitude, you know, just still being here.
Absolutely.
After hearing story after story after story of loss is something that I'm tremendously grateful for. Yeah. And I would also like to close by saying thank you, Nicole and Eric, for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you for having us. I've enjoyed this and it was a great topic today.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for your input and knowledge.
The Empowering Connections podcast is not intended to replace the need for a professional counseling relationship. This podcast does not constitute professional advice or counseling services. As always, if you need mental health services, please seek a qualified mental health provider. You can find County Aikens on the websites Psychology Today and Therapy for Black Girls. If you have an iTunes or Spotify account, please subscribe, share, and continue to listen. Feel free to check out Connie Aiken's website at www.empoweringserenity.net and follow Connie on Instagram at Connie Aikens LPC. You may not edit, modify, or redistribute this podcast. We appreciate you listening to the Empowering Connections podcast and providing feedback. Stay positive.